Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 70. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And Josh was unable to join us again this week because I think he watched Punisher Warzone and is crying in a fetal position right now.
Our hearts go out to you, Josh.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, as always, let's start off with what we've watched this week. I've actually gotten a lot for a change. So I don't know. Do you have much, Barry?
A few. You go ahead.
Okay. Started off right after we recorded last week's show, which I know is still yet to be up. It'll be up soon, I promise. Watched Role Models, which was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I was...
How awesome was that? That I'll just say that kiss sequence near the end.
Yes, that was quite good. You know, there was just so much to like about this movie, and it's so... It is much in that Apatow vein of wrong yet sweethearted.
Yeah.
But I think has pulled it off in ways that I haven't seen in a while, which is very nice.
Yeah, I dug it too.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And then I watched Transporter 3, which, you know, it is not high art by a long shot.
Yeah.
But if you ever feel like an 80s type action movie, just a lot with a guy beating a lot of people up and some good car chases, it's worth a rental at least. Then I watched Will Smith and a Jellyfish have a very intimate moment together in 7 Pounds. Which you saw this, right, Ethan?
No, I did. I knew the twist, but
that's
I did
right.
not see the film.
Okay. You know, in many ways, it's along the same vein as Pursuit of Happiness, and that it's a very solid acting job by Will Smith. You know, it's easy to make jokes about still, even though it's pretty good. I don't know. It was good, but I don't ever need to watch it ever again.
Mm.
It's a very obvious Oscar bait. Then your favorite movie of last year, Barry, I saw Punisher Warzone. Holy crap, was that a bad movie?
Mm.
Yeah, it's astounding how bad that was.
Yeah.
It made me long for the subtleties that Dolph Lundgren brought in the original film.
Indeed.
So sad. And then I've been catching up on Battlestar Galactica season 3. I'm getting close to being caught up to everyone else. Really good show. Well worth checking out. Ethan, we'll go to you next, sir. What have you watched?
I watched Twin Falls, Idaho.
I love that film.
Yeah, I thought it was so awesome. Those guys, the Polish brothers, they're freaking awesome. The only other one that I've seen of theirs is North Fork,
mm-hmm.
which was a really interesting movie, and this was just as good. It's funny though; it actually reminded me a lot in terms of plot to Edward's Scissorhands. But in a lot of ways, it's not quite like that movie. It's like a lot of Burton's movies are kind of. Well, I love Burton, but a lot of his movies, frankly, are just kind of art direction masturbation, basically. And
sure.
This was just, it's really told like a bizarre story, but in such a sweet and emotional way. And it's very powerful film to me.
Cool.
Really good.
Yeah.
I also watched the Day the Earth Stood Still remake.
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
Where was the fun in this movie?
That's an excellent question.
Rooting like, for Jaden Smith to die?
Like, exactly. But this was like this was primed into being the whole, like the summer, or well, I guess it came out in Christmas, but being like a popcorn blockbuster movie. But there's like probably like 5 minutes of action in total. And that's being pretty generous, like that estimate. Like, where was the shit blowing up? I just wanted some dumb fun, but it was just dumb. Like,
well, they had to spend 10 minutes at McDonald's talking about the plot.
Was it McDonald's or Burger King?
It was McDonald's. I think it was McDonald's, wasn't it?
Yeah, because the golden arches appear in the windshield.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's sad that that's the most constructive argument we can come up with about the video still.
Keanu talking in Chinese was pretty awesome, though.
Yeah, real disappointment.
Yeah. You kind of had a bad week, didn't you?
No, it's... I watched the first 45 minutes of Twilight.
Is that all you could take?
Yeah, I was just... This is bullshit, and I just deleted the movie. I'm sorry. I got so sick of seeing Robert Pattinson's constipated look. I was like, this is so... I just kept thinking how stupid this is. There's no plot here, and it's just... like this is a big, it's supposed to be a big franchise. Like, I know that the third one is going to be like the big 4th of July release for 2010. I'm like,
really?
Can they release something? Yeah. Can they release something else?
Can we get another Will Smith movie?
Yeah. I'd see Hancock 2 before I saw the next Twilight movie.
Fair enough.
I'd see 8 pounds before.
Okay. Yeah. To be fair, I've never said that someone should watch this by themselves. You have to watch it with a group of people so you can mock it and have fun. Just yeah. Watching it by yourself, there's just no redeeming value to it.
Yeah. But wait, things get better. I watched Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Oh, wonderful.
Good man.
Awesome. Like, this is seriously like a masterpiece of sequel cinema. It's like one of the most insane, probably studio movies ever released when you think about it.
Yeah.
Like just stuff like the Hulk Hogan cameo and the spider gremlin and the electricity gremlin and the gremlins eating Leonard Maltin alive. Yep. It's so awesome. So awesome. I wish Josh was here so we could.
Yes. I wish you were here too. Yeah. That's one of the best sequels ever.
Robert Picardo.
Yep.
Yeah, and last thing, I just watched this just before we did this, actually. I watched You're Welcome, America, A Final Night with George W. Bush.
I'm dying to see that. How was that?
It was really funny, like really fall down funny, hilarious. I you got to see it.
Cool.
Right on. Cool. All right, well, let's talk about what hit theaters this week. No, we didn't get to you, did we?
No.
What did you see this week, sir? I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I watched Wes Craven's Shocker again for the first time in a long time. You know, it's interesting because he made it with the knowledge that he wanted to like create another Freddy Krueger franchise character, and it didn't happen after one movie. There's some great stuff in Shocker, particularly the last 20 minutes of the movie where the special effects kind of take over, and they actually get into the whole notion that this guy can get you from jumping out of your TV set. Really cool stuff. And Mitch Pileggi from The X-Files plays Horace Pinker, the bad guy. And Peter Berg, the director of Hancock, plays the young hero. The problem with Shocker is that so much of it is dedicated to this plot idea that the monster, initially the monster like jumps from body to body. It's just like Fallen. Fallen, in fact, stole this plot twist. So you've got like, you know, like this bad guy is a foul-mouthed, you know, killer. And he like jumps into the body of like a little girl who all of a sudden becomes a foul-mouthed killer and this construction worker and this soccer mom. And it's just unintentionally hilarious and terrible. And so much of the movie takes up that plot twist. So when they finally dump that terrible story idea and they actually get into the whole thing, like this guy will get you while you're watching TV, it's really great. But too much of the movie is, you know, it's just like Fallen. So that was a disappointment. The other thing I saw that I really loved, and it's still, for me, one of the most haunting films I've ever seen, is Brian De Palma's Casualties of War with Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn. I think it's one of the most underrated films to deal with the Vietnam War. Definitely one of the most disturbing and one of the most viscerally assaultive. But it has John C. Reilly in his film debut. John Leguizamo's in it. Excellent film, and definitely, you know, I mean, we mentioned like the Back to the Future movies. Fox is so good in those movies, but I love that he did do some dramas early on. I think Casualties of War is the best dramatic work he ever did.
I hate to disagree here, but I couldn't take him seriously while watching it. Sorry.
Okay.
I don't know. I just kept thinking it was literally like it's probably because his character was kind of similar, but it felt like Marty McFly goes to Vietnam.
Wow. Well, that's what Back to the Future 4 is going to be. Okay.
Well, you know, I like that they cast him. I thought it was interesting because his character is supposed to be like the moral compass for the film. Where basically, he's standing in for the audience. So, I mean, he is so earnest and so forthright. I didn't have that problem. But you did. You thought it was too much like he was playing his own persona?
Yeah, I think the movie overall is pretty ham-fisted, too. So, eh.
Well, this is what the critics said in 1989, too, so.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. Okay, now, is that all you had, sir?
That's it.
All right, let's talk about what hit theaters this week and what knocked Watchmen out of first.
Well, you've got the remake of The Last House on the Left with Tony Goldwyn and Monica Potter. Miss March, a Playboy-infused sex comedy, which nobody saw. And the remake slash sequel slash rehab slash it's back, Race to Witch Mountain with The Rock.
Did you say rehab?
I did.
Okay, just making sure.
And actually, not The Rock, I'm sorry. Dwayne Johnson, Shame on Me, and Carla Gugino.
So before we get to the movies, do you want to, I'm sure we should probably address even ever so briefly the drop off that Watchmen had. What was it, 67%, 68%, something like that? You weren't surprised, were you, Ethan?
No, actually, it's weird. All the people I talked to, like I know in real life who saw it, loved it, but which I wasn't expecting. But so I thought maybe it wouldn't have such a huge draw because people were like, I saw that maybe the sign that mainstream audiences were liking it. But yeah, really, this doesn't surprise me.
It's a difficult thing to take on, even if they'd gotten a completely faithful adaptation, which is about the closest that you could have gotten. And yeah, I don't know. We were talking beforehand, and I think any movie that sparks such fierce debate among the geek community, it can't, you know, it deserves some props. So
to do really well, I think it needed to get the kind of word of mouth and critical response that The Dark Knight got, because it is so long and it is such a downbeat piece of material. And it just hasn't got that. People, it really is a love it or hate it phenomenon.
It really is, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you saw at least one of these releases,
I saw two of those, actually, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see anything this week, Ethan, of these?
No, I didn't see Sprint to Witch Mountain.
All right, tell us what you saw, sir.
I hated The Last House on the Left remake. I thought it was really disgusting and vile.
As it should be.
Yeah, well, you could say that, but I don't know if we really needed to see like the bad guy get his hands stuck down a disposal while the father like smashes his brains in with a hammer. I thought it was really, really beneath even like the original. Yeah, I thought it was just really vile, disgusting. I thought it was ridiculous how these rational adults went from being like these intelligent, successful adults to like being like, let's murder these kids. And I mean, it was really nasty. If the rape scene doesn't have people leaving the theaters, I think some of the violence scenes should. But the fact that I saw it with an audience, everybody was like high-fiving each other and clapping and like cheering after all the really, really graphic, nasty scenes, I think it shows that there is an audience for this movie, and I definitely don't ever want to sit in that audience again.
Michael Haneke is wagging his finger right now.
That's right. That's right. Good for you, Michael Haneke. Yeah, I was very, you know, I hated the original, but I really didn't like the remake at all. I thought it was just slick trash and very exploitative too. The way they photograph the young daughter, they go for close-ups on her supple body throughout the whole movie in ways like it made me think like an old, like mouth breathing creepy old man in a big yellow raincoat was filming the movie. So
wow, and for the record, you're more of a fan of The Virgin Spring, which is what all this is based off of.
I'm a huge fan of The Virgin Spring. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, and I love Wes Craven movies, but I even like Shocker better than the remake of The Last House on the Left. Race Witch Mountain was fun. It's edited so tightly that at times it moves way too quick. I felt like there was a really well paced movie that's in there that it just got so cut down to the basics. It is more action-oriented than anything. It's not really a comedy. It's more of an action movie. But sci-fi fans are going to freaking love it. I mean, there's a cameo in it from like all these UFO enthusiasts, including Whitley Strieber, the author of Communion. He has a cameo appearance in the movie as himself. The kids from the original Witch Mountain are in it. Meredith Salinger, the star of The Journey of Natty Gann, she's in it.
Wow.
I mean, it's like this Disney live-action reunion. And the movie itself, I would compare it to Flight of the Navigator. It's like that. It's silly. It's definitely meant for kids, but it's fun. And it's edgy enough for adults, but it's actually appropriate enough for little kids. I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
So just minus Pee-wee Herman.
Minus the Pee-wee Herman voice, yes. But you do have a creepy-faced monster alien at the end, which I thought, this is great. If I was 10 or 8 years old, this would be the greatest movie I've ever seen in my whole life. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, last week was such a great DVD week. You know, really, you can honestly say there's nowhere to go but down, but who knew it'd go down this bad?
Yeah, this is one of the worst DVD weeks in history, I'd say. You got Twilight, the less said about the better. And this, by the way, is not the film with Paul Newman, just in case you're curious. This is the film with Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, just in case you like me.
Something I wanted to bring up, I forgot to, but... There's a scene in the movie where after Edward saves Bella, he's trying to explain because he doesn't want to give away he's a vampire. So he says, "I had an adrenaline rush. Google it, right?" Yeah. But there's a scene later in the movie where she's on Google, but she isn't Googling adrenaline rush. Like, what was the deal with that?
You remember it was written in 6 weeks. You know, there's only so much you can really get into this.
I think the point that the filmmakers wanted to make was that Google, go to Google, kids. Product placement, Google.
And yeah, you can pick it up in the single disc or the two disc or any of the 15 different special exclusives that different stores have.
Including the three disc at Target. Yes. Yeah.
Even Costco has their own versions of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Slightly better. You've got Eulogy with Penelope Cruz and Ben Kingsley. I've heard that this is actually the movie that Penelope Cruz should have won the Oscar for. I've heard this is a really incredible film, great thriller. And then my pick for last year's worst movie, and certainly one of the worst films I've ever had the displeasure of sitting through, Punisher War Zone in a 1- and 2-disc special quote unquote edition.
Special, not in a good way. Sorry. It's. Yay!
I hate this movie.
Oh, I don't blame you. There's over the top gore, and then there's this movie. Like,
it's like everything was over the top, though. It's like it was made for like 8-year-olds by 8-year-old boys, and it was so terrible, so bad.
It was so bad. It's hilarious. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Wow, this is just a sad week. All right, shall we move on to news,
please?
All right, I'll let you kick it off, Ethan.
Okay. Apparently, Fox is interested in a Fantastic Four reboot. Thoughts?
Shouldn't they just make one more and just call it a trilogy, just call it a day?
You know, I hate to admit it, I have a soft spot in my heart for these movies.
Because I do like Chris Evans, and I do like Michael Chiklis. I like what they're doing there. I like what they're doing so much, I'm willing to sit through one more of these movies, but just one more. That's it, just one more.
When you screw up Galactus the way they did in the last one, yeah.
But I thought the last one was still better than the prior one.
Yeah, and well, go ahead.
I was a fan of the comics when I was younger, but I didn't even see the second one.
Well, I thought they did the Silver Surfer quite well. I thought.
Yeah, they did a pretty darn good job with that. I actually own the 2-disc of that. Yeah. Granted, I got it for 50 cents, but still, I own it, dang it. you know...
And Fox thanked you for their 50, for the 50 cents.
In many ways, I think the movies kept true a lot to the heart of the comics, and that Fantastic Four was never meant to be taken that seriously.
Well, the thing is, as long as Tom Rothman is still in charge of Fox, we're not going to get a good Fantastic Four movie.
Calling it out. And Barry's being quiet.
Well, that could very well, or yeah, I think for me, I'm more about the director too, Tim Story. I was never convinced that he was the right guy to make these movies, but you're absolutely right though. I mean, this is they always wanted these to be more family films. You know, this was never for the Batman Begins crowd.
In light of the silver package,
yeah, this is more like about the Rocketeer Dick Tracy crowd than it was for like a hardcore comic book.
See, I think it's doing the Rocketeer a disservice to put it in the same group. With you.
Yeah,
Rocketeer really is like that could be one of the greatest comic book movies of all time.
Yeah, I would agree. You're right. I'm just talking about in terms of the tone being very light. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I really, like you said, I'd hate to see Chris Evans and Michael Chiklis go. That's the only downside to doing a reboot.
Yeah,
unless you somehow talked them into staying in and canning the other two.
Well, I want to see the Apatow group take it on. Paul Rudd is Mr. Fantastic. Leslie Mann is Sue Storm.
See, I'd say Jason Siegel is Mr. Fantastic.
No, Michael Cera is the Flaming Torch, and Seth Rogen is the Thing.
Okay.
So you say Jason Siegel is Dr. Doom then?
Nah, Bill Hader.
Bill Hader.
Wow.
That would be very funny, actually. And you know, with Mr. Fantastic being able to stretch, you know, the sex jokes would just have no end at all.
Let's leave it alone because I'm thinking too much about that point right there. Wow.
Jokes about, you know, Johnny Storm being flaming. Yeah, you know, there's so many low juvenile opportunities there.
Yes. Yeah. Flame retardant silk shirts and okay.
Yep.
Rock penis.
Yeah, there's that too. Okay, to move on. Wow. From one possible remake to another one, apparently Warner Brothers wants to remake It. I don't know how I feel about this.
Well, if they do it right. I mean, they were behind Stephen King's Dreamcatcher a few years ago, and I thought they they took a fun book and they made it a really, really remarkably bad film, even with Morgan Freeman involved. So, I don't know.
I own the TV series. The miniseries, because it's just so freaky. Like, the kid stuff is kind of amateurish, but if they got Tim Curry to come back as Pennywise, I'd see it.
But I agree with you, Dave, even though it is old and cheesy at times, it still works.
Oh, Tim Curry is freaking scary.
He's very good as Pennywise the Clown. Yeah, Well,
I haven't read the book, but from what I understand, isn't it like 1,000 pages long?
It is, yes.
And they dropped it down to a 5 or 6 hour miniseries. Yeah. So you want to cut it again down to 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Sorry, I'm being a total jerk today.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
A point I've been meaning to make, this isn't necessarily about this itself, but I feel like every week I've been on the show, we've discussed a reboot, remake, reimagining, rerun, retread, reheat,
regurgitation,
retake.
Are you saying we should quit talking about those?
No, I'm just saying Hollywood should quit talking about those.
But there's so much money to be made there, Ethan. I mean, why think of new ideas when they could just like milk the old ones until there's nothing to be milked anymore? Especially these wonderful ideas that people kind of remember, or the ideas like you and I remember, but the young kids, the 17-year-olds who are going to the theaters, they don't remember. So let's sucker them and let's just do a Xerox copy, just like, you know, cast these like up and coming stars, and, you know, only spend like $15 million. The movie grosses $20 million 1 weekend. You've got a hit.
Well, the thing is, like, for example, I'd like to see another Gremlins movie, but I'd want to see a Gremlins 3 from Joe Dante with the same tone of the first two. Not a reimagining it as like a, I don't know, either a kitty toy commercial or like a dark, gritty drama about Gremlins and Mogwai, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, part of the other thing is there's enough that Stephen King's written that this is the only place you could go with this. Like, they couldn't do any of his more off kilter stuff, shall we say, like the girl who loved, what was it?
Tom Gordon.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the great ones. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're exactly right. There's so many novels of his or stories of his they've not made into films that would make great films. Like, why go back to this one, which is really a beloved horror film, oddly enough, for what it is. It really is considered one of the scariest Stephen King movies. And there's some truth to that. It's a genuinely creepy film.
Or even go to like the Dark Tower stuff or whatever.
Yeah. Why not?
Oh, that'd be hard. The Dark Tower.
Yeah, it would. they would screw that up so easily.
Well, okay. That's
without cool. The right director, yeah.
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder.
Okay, what else have you got for news, sir? I'll save my last one for after you do this one.
Okay, Thor, The Avengers, and Spider-Man 4 have gotten release dates. Spider-Man 4 is going to be out officially on May 6th, 2011. And The Avengers and Thor got bumped from summer 2011. No, wait.
2010.
Actually, no. Thor was going to come out in 2010, right? But it got bumped to 11, right?
I think so.
Okay, and I think The Avengers was going to be out in 2011, but it got bumped to 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is better, actually, that Kenneth Branagh has more time to develop Thor, because it seemed like it was going to have to start shooting pretty soon if it wanted to make that release date. And the good thing about these new Marvel movies is they really take their time to develop them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Who are they looking to cast for Thor? Wasn't it Skarsgård's kid?
Yeah. Who I've only seen on True Blood, but he was really good on it. So I'm open to that. But is it like Josh Hartnett in contention for
to
Loki?
To play Loki.
Oh, Loki. Okay, yeah. Cool. Not Thor. Oh, man. I love how they have the release dates like
there's no
set.
Script yet.
Yeah, no script, not a frame of footage, but hey, we got those release dates, you know.
Like Spider-Man 4, I'm like, has anything been written about this yet? I mean, giving Green Lantern a date when you have a script already and it's already gotten such big positive buzz, I can understand that. But there's no script for half of these movies.
I mean, there's like all it does is create like these teaser coming attraction trailer posters, you know, that have become overnight collector's items because, you know, it's like... like the Tim Burton Superman movie, that poster is like a collector's item because it's got the date and everything on it. And never happened. Didn't shoot a frame of it.
It's like, you know what happened the last time we had someone, you know, put a release date for a comic book movie and not have anything ready? We got X-Men: The Last Stand.
That's right.
So,
Actually, I was just interested in another Marvel thing, but Mickey Rourke officially signed up for Iron Man 2, right?
Yes.
But it also mentioned the article that Sony was considering him for a villain role in Spider-Man 4, so I wonder who he would have played.
Can't do the Sandman.
No.
They have to be someone big and burly like that.
Hunter?
Rhino?
Well, I was going to say Kingpin?
I could see him doing Rhino or possibly even Kraven.
Yeah, Kraven. Well, Hunter, yeah.
I think it's been long enough since Daredevil that they can do Kingpin, though.
Yeah, they could. Although I got to say, Michael Clark Duncan, one of the two, he was really good as...
He was.
Yeah, that was good. That was good casting, even though the movie, not a fan.
Yeah, I know. All right, moving on next. Unless you have more Marvel stuff to bring up, sir.
No.
Okay. Apparently, you know, people wonder why you can get on a bad rampage against Fox. Here's Exhibit A. Apparently, Fox is going to be removing special features from rental DVDs as of the end of this month. Huh. So, essentially, if you go rent a movie from Hollywood or Blockbuster or Netflix or wherever,
yeah,
for Marley and Me, Slumdog Millionaire, and The Wrestler, as well as Day That Stood Still and Notorious, you will get the movie over zero, the movie only, no special features.
Oh, man.
So if you want special features, you know, because the rental audience doesn't ever watch special features.
You know,
I mean, in what world does this make sense?
This is great, because like,
well,
go ahead, Ethan.
No, Barry, I feel like you're going to make a better point than me.
I think he's still composing himself. That's why I wanted you to go ahead.
Yeah, you go ahead. Well, you go first, yeah.
Thing is, well, when I rent Street Fighter The Legend of Chun-Li, I'm definitely going to see what prosthetics they put on Chris Klein to make him really sparkle, so.
All right, then. All right, go for it.
Well, you know, I'm so not in the same ballpark as you guys with your geek rage against Fox, until now. seriously, I don't blame the studio as an entity for making bad movies, or, you know, or the fact that a movie like Marley and Me and Taken, which are so-so movies, are blockbusters while great movies fail. I mean, for me, like, to me, there's all these other studios you could, like, jump on other than Fox. I don't care about the PG-13 Die Hard or any of those issues. But this is the kind of thing, it's almost like, it's like they've gotten away with murder before, and, you know, certainly in the eyes of the fanboys, but this is like a serious up yours. This is like, it's one thing if everybody did this, but this is the only studio that's doing it. I hope this isn't a trend that catches on, because that is inexcusable.
You know, that's what we were saying when the studios were making 1 in 2 disc releases of DVDs a year ago, and now it's commonplace.
This is just, this, to me, that this is just such a bite me to all the people out there who loved The Wrestler and Slumdog and all these movies.
You know, the fact is, I may not have the cash to buy The Wrestler when it comes out on a release date, but I still want to know the features. I want to know what's there. I want to preview what I could very well buy.
Right.
This makes me just not want to buy it.
Exactly. There's a ton of DVDs I want to see just for the extras. And hey, now if I love the extras and I know this is something I will buy it. This is Yeah, I think that's so counterproductive, and what a sleazy, terrible thing to do. Is this official? Or is
yes.
this a rumor?
Yeah,
this
March 31st.
March 31st, God.
And see, what it is it's essentially trying to polarize the buying public into saying, you are going to buy or rent. You can't do both. We don't want your money twice. That's what it's coming down to saying, which is one of the most idiotic things.
It's certainly what it feels like, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, do it to Twilight. I don't care, but, you know...
But this is the best picture of the year. Yeah. That's terrible. Because some people are just going to want to see it as opposed to buying it first. I mean, that's kind of the – imagine that. That's kind of the novelty of this. You get to buy it or you get to rent it or both.
Well, and I can't imagine the rental companies being happy about this because, you know, a lot of their business comes from selling these previously viewed copies.
Right.
They're already trying to get $15 for a movie that's been out for, you know, a couple months that you can already get for $15 at most places brand new. You do it with stripped-down features, and good luck selling that thing.
Right.
I mean, I can't see anyone being happy about this except Fox.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm a little disgusted right now. I, you know, it's funny. Like, for months I've been hearing you guys, like, Day the Earth Stood Still, Marley and Me, and I've been like, oh, guys, it's not the studio's fault. Well, this, no, I think they've gone too far. This is outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah, special antenna, here I come. Wait. All right, what else have you got, Ethan? I'm done with news.
Okay, it looks like Taken 2, Taken Again is going to come out soon.
Electric Boogaloo.
What was talking to... Well, yeah?
No, you tell me who you were talking to, Barry.
I was talking to my wife, Julia, this morning, and I took her to see Taken, and we both enjoyed it for what it is, especially because Liam Neeson just, like, you know... Just like Ghost of Paris, and like kills everybody in Paris. I mean, it's fun for what it is, and Liam Neeson is an awesome action hero. So we were like talking about like what could they possibly do from here? I mean, like, is he going to get kidnapped again? Is she going to get kidnapped again? Or is it going to be like one of his missions? But I really think they should have just walked away from this. You know, I don't think they need a Taken franchise.
I think they're actually going to do a subtle transformation to make him Jack Bauer and start rescuing important people's kids. I don't know.
Or they could make it like a new transporter.
Okay.
They could.
I suppose.
Although I don't know if I want to see Liam Neeson like getting all greased up on the floor and like rolling around beating up bad guys.
No one wants that. Nobody wins.
Not even Liam wants that.
Wow. Have you got anything else, Ethan?
Vin Diesel still wants that Riddick sequel.
Vin Diesel still wants a
Vin
career.
Diesel and A Kid in Peoria. They want that Riddick sequel.
Oh, yeah, man. I feel like he's been talking about this like forever. Like he keeps saying, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, don't worry, it's going to happen. Newsflash, the last one bombed. It's not.
It's like John Travolta talking about how there's going to be another Battlefield Earth. It's never going to happen.
The Revenge of Terrell.
That's right. Well, the last one did leave a lot of questions. I mean, you know, it was a cliffhanger. Terrell was, you know, imprisoned. Earth was saved.
I thought the questions were who in their right mind green-lighted this? Who let it out to release?
I actually have one bit of news. The Sam Raimi Drag Me to Hell trailer, which I thought was awesome, incredible, cool.
And I forgot to watch it before the show.
Dang it! Did you see it, Ethan?
Yeah, well, we can give a summary to Dave, can't we? We can make those noises from it and stuff. And...
Okay, I'm sold.
There you go.
So it's a good trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very pleased with it. I mean, I see a Sam Raimi trailer for a horror film. I expect, you know, like old school effects and, you know, it's Spider-Man slick. But yeah, I think it looks like a great movie. I really do.
Like a return to like Evil Dead kind of fun?
And that's what the trailer capitalizes on, too. They say from the director of the Evil Dead trilogy. So
nice.
Yeah, I thought it looked really, really great. Really, really polished. Alison Lohman can really break out from this. If it's as good as the trailer, it looks like it could be really unique and really, really interesting and not like every other horror movie we've gotten this year. So
we can hope.
Yeah, some originality for once.
Yes. All right. Have you got anything else, Ethan?
Sadly, no.
Okay, that's all right. Hey, you know, we're doing just fine on time here. Yeah, we're doing good. That's all right. So we're going to take a quick break, but yeah, then we'll be right back to talk about Preston Sturges, Unfaithfully Yours.
Another year, another convention season, and while geeks are out there hobnobbing and having a great time, you're still sitting at home watching reruns of Lost in Space. And I know what you're thinking. I can't get to every con. Isn't there someone that can help a brother out? Well, of course there is. Geek Radio Daily is going to be in Denver, Colorado for Starfest April 17th through the 19th. Check them out at starland.com. And for the first time ever, the GRD Street Crew will be streaming live video from the floor of a convention. Because it's the future, yo. You'll be able to see all the events as they happen simply by going to ustream.tv/geekradiodaily. Submit your questions because we'll be interviewing some of your favorite geeky celebrities like...
Insert celebrity voice here.
And...
That guy that's in that thing you like.
Plus...
That one girl you think so hot? Her too.
April 17th through the 19th, we'll be at Starfest and so can you. Stop by for more info at your daily stop for all your geeky goodness, geekradiodaily.com.
And we're going to have so much fun at Starfest. You're going to see us probably in that feed pretty heavily because we have no idea. We're going to be hanging out with the GRD crew quite a bit in Denver, and I have no idea when we'll be taping what broadcasting. Like, we could be at Casa Bonita, and they'll start just streaming for some reason.
That alone would be a great episode.
Yeah. Now I heard there's talk that there may not be a Rocky Horror thing this year.
Oh, no.
But if there is, then you might see us getting... Oh, man. I kind of hope they cancel Rocky Horror now because I've never seen it in a crowd and get sacrificed.
We could find it in Denver if they're not doing it at Starfest because, you know, somewhere in here, even in the spring, somewhere in America, there's always a Rocky Horror midnight Saturday night screening. So...
Yeah, so we're going to have lots of fun. The joke is that none of us know who we're going to be talking to yet, so we'll just kind of find out as we do it. So it'll still be a good time. Join us all out there. We are officially going to be doing a panel on podcasting, which will be quite fun.
Great.
And yeah, cool stuff like that. So with enough pimping and whatevering, what are we talking this week, sir?
Preston Sturges, Unfaithful Years, one of the great, great comedies. You know, a lot of comedies, they settle on one gimmick. This movie is just chock full of jokes that work over and over again. It's got a very imaginative premise. This is a fun movie.
It totally is. You got to see this, right, Ethan?
I did.
Yay!
What did you think?
Yeah, it was quite good. It was my first Preston Sturges film, so I'm really interested to see how what his other works and see how kind of they thematically and stylistically fit in with this.
You know, Preston Sturges just likes to have a lot of fun in his movies.
Yeah, and it really shows. It really does. Everybody looks like they're having a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, the fantasy sequences really do it for me in this movie. I mean, do we want to break down the story?
Yeah, go ahead. You go ahead.
Essentially, it's about this guy who's a very famous British composer, and he travels the world, apparently, you know, conducting at different symphonies, doing shows, and at some point he leaves town and asks his brother-in-law to keep an eye on his wife, as in, you know, hey, if she's lonely, take her out to dinner.
Yeah.
Well, he has her followed, and there is a report involved, and the husband is like, you know, whatever, and tears it up, burns it up, whatever, and starts finding out little bits and pieces that makes him question whether she's been faithful to him. And he eventually gets so convinced that she's going to that she's cheating, he decides he's going to kill her. Well, no, he doesn't decide. He starts fantasizing about killing her while conducting these great symphonic pieces. So you have like these elaborate ways in which he kills his wife and her lover, set to these great musical masterpieces. And then at some point he does decide to take things into his own hands, and wackiness ensues.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's very well explained. The conductor is played. No, no, not at all. The conductor is played by Rex Harrison.
He's great in it too.
He's great, and this is the guy. Well, we should mention who he is. Dr. Doolittle, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was the inspiration for Stewie Griffin.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that. Wow. I just
learned something new every day.
My enthusiasm for The Family Guy just went up about 10 points. That's cool.
Right on.
Yeah. Excellent.
So the intricacies of these fantasies. It's just so fun. Like, it turns mustache twirling evil.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they're like little comic shorts unto themselves, these little sequences, and they're so cleverly constructed, and they have like a almost like a Looney Tune cartoon kind of feel to them.
You know, that's very true, because Looney Tunes introduced me to a lot of classical music just by their use.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I didn't even think about that.
Well, you know, it made me think of that classic episode of, the cartoon, the Looney Tune one, where Bugs Bunny puts on a wig and he's trying to be Leopold Stravinsky, and it's like all that goofiness. Yeah, like it reminded me of like something like that. I mean, it's so outrageous and loony, but so funny. Even though I prefer Sullivan's Travels, and I'm not done with this series yet, so I have not seen all of Sturges' films. I think Sullivan's Travels thus far is his masterpiece, but this one I would say is almost, if not a little more playful, even.
It is, especially considering the tone of the film, talking about possibly fantasizing about killing your spouse.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's just something wrong with that. Oh, go ahead.
But I think the funniest scene in the movie isn't actually a fantasy sequence. It's the part where he keeps screwing up, basically, and causing more. The destruction keeps escalating. I'll just say that
it's part of the wackiness ensuing. Yes, yes. You know, that's the thing that I love about Sturges, is that he can have such weird, whacked out, weird, fun stuff, but yet put a little bit of message in there too. Mm-hmm. You know, in a way, you could almost say he's the forerunner to Apatow.
Yeah, and like Apatow, even like the Coen brothers, he gets a lot of mileage out of his supporting characters, all the supporting people in the background. He always finds like funny ways to incorporate like the supporting guys. Like, even if it's not their star vehicle, he always finds ways to like have these loony figures like somehow play so well in the foreground.
Yeah, he has the tendency to get a lot of character actors, and they already know how to make the most out of what they have. Yeah. So he almost doesn't even have to direct them at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like the part at the end when he goes to at the beginning when he goes to the private detective. And the private dick says, you know, we just need to learn to love women for what they let us have. You know, it's little things like that. I mean, it's not necessarily the point of the movie, but it's just little nuggets like that.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's kind of a little bit deeper than, you know, the weirdness that's going on in this film.
Right. Yeah.
It's really hard. You know, this is a movie that's pretty hard to talk about without getting into spoilers. But it's a lot of fun. It's well worth checking out.
Yes. Yes. Great comedy. It really is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Rex Harrison is... He plays that committed husband so well, and his slow descent into insanity, if you will, is just so much fun to watch.
I want to mention that they remade this in 1982 with Dudley Moore as the husband, as the composer, excuse me, and Nastasia Kinski as the possibly unfaithful wife. Having Dudley Moore replace Rex Harrison is kind of like
Mark Wahlberg taking over for Cary Grant.
I was going to say, well, not quite that bad, but it's kind of like Christopher Plummer being replaced by Tim Allen. It's just, there's one is a master of the understatement, and one is known for like buffoonish, you know, very flamboyant, flagrant comedy. And some of the remake works, and some of it, but the things that do work is because they're copying it completely from the original. Nastassja Kinski proved to be a really terrific character actress. I don't think it was one of her best films. And Dudley Moore, you know, who's best known for his Blake Edwards movies, like, you know, 10.
Arthur,
of course. Yeah, I can't say the remake has really stayed with me at all. At all.
There's a shock. A remake sucking?
Yeah, imagine that.
Never
It's
happens.
Like the theme of this episode. Remakes suck, for the most part.
Didn't we already do that episode?
Did we? If we haven't, then that's a gold mine.
Oh, no, no, it was remakes they should make. That's what we did.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, like the two remakes they should
make. Yeah. There's something about the subtlety that Sturgis uses in the midst of the insanity that's just, it's masterful the way he does it. Mm-hmm. It really is. So, yeah. Wow, we didn't talk a whole lot about it, but is there anything else you want to say about it, Ethan?
Well, what did you guys think of the ending?
I thought,
you know, it's a happy ending, obviously, but I don't know. I felt this kind of darker tinge to it for some reason that he's still, you know, obviously he's, you know, he's made up, but the fact that he went to the length of fantasizing about killing her is so dark in itself that you think he could just snap, really.
This is true. Again, it's part of that subtlety that you can watch a Sturgis movie several times and get something new every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you never get just a straight up, gee whiz, and they lived happily ever after ending, which is what I love. It's just enough off kilter that, okay.
Yeah. What year did this come out?
Oh, crud. I don't know.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
48?
Yeah. I mean, I guess for its time, I mean, it is... You know,
it's definitely dark for its time.
It's dark. It's dark enough, and it's light enough, and I think you do manage to walk away with a smile, as opposed to, you know, like, my God, we just. It's like there's a Jack Lemmon comedy called How to Murder Your Wife, and it's a similar idea where it's very funny and cheerful, as opposed to something that's like really like ghastly and nasty.
Is this kind of the beginning of dark comedy? Would you say?
Could very well be.
Because I mean, we're not talking black comedy like, you know, War of the Roses or Death to Smoochie or something like that, but. It's definitely a dark idea to be making a comedy about.
Well, plus it's post-World War II, so I think like America was ready to like embrace darker stuff. Because, you know, there was that weird period where like during World War II, like Dumbo was a huge hit, but It's a Wonderful Life was a total flop. I don't think people were ready to deal with a guy wanting to kill himself on Christmas, you know, to be a haha fun movie, which now, even though now it's like the one movie we all watch. So, yeah, I think it really played well in that time because... Yeah, if it opened up around World War II, it might have been too much.
Fair enough. Cool. Well, do we want to give a rating to this film at all? Like out of 10?
I'll give it a 3.5 out of 4.
Wow, okay. Fine. Go out of 4.
I'll give it a 7.5 out of 10. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, dude.
I will give it...
Dude.
I'll give it out of 10 and 8.5.
That's probably about where I'd put it too.
Yeah, yeah. We
use different rating systems, Dave. You have to rate out of like 7 cats or something.
Wow, 6 out of 7 cats.
Well, we're geeks, so I'll say out of a scale of 1 to 10, pair of broken glasses with tape in the middle, I will give it 7.5.
There you go. That way, the tape's just off.
Exactly right
on that one. All right, yeah, I'll do 4 out of 5 rancors.
There you go. Very cool. Very geeky. Yes, yes.
Wow, that was just wrong to do. I feel a little bit dirty
D&D
for doing
after
that.
This.
Yeah, 4th edition. No, 2nd edition. Yeah.
Have Rush play in the background.
Gotta love Rush. Rush and Joshua Jackson.
The all-night Rush mixtape from Futurama.
You brought that back.
That's right.
Well done with the Joshua Jackson, sir.
Thank you. Hey, they go together.
Do they now?
Yes, they're very big in Birmingham.
Okay.
So I've heard.
Okay, that just completely broke my brain. All right, but yes, I think we also say, you know, if you haven't seen this film, you want to check out a good classic, a fun movie, definitely need to rent this.
Yes.
At bare minimum. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, all right. Well, heck, let's just...
Well, I'm sorry, one more thing. We should pimp Criterion, because they get the...
Yes, there's a Criterion edition.
Yes.
If Criterion puts it out, it's worth buying, as if we haven't said this often enough.
Right.
I forgot what all there is in here. There's interviews with Sturgis' widow, I believe.
Cool.
There's all kinds of making of their stuff. It's it's one of the loaded Criterion releases. There are some that are a little more bare bones than others, but this one's pretty stinking loaded. I think you can actually pick it up for like $20-25 now pretty easily.
Sorry to go on a bit of a rant here, but Criterion's in Canada, usually about $50 to $60, sometimes even $70.
What?
Wow.
Dang. That's now, a lot. Like if you get like deep discount or something, you can catch it on a right sale, you can get them for like $20 or $30.
Although I would rather pay $50 for a loaded DVD than for one that has no extras. Oh,
brought the story back.
I did.
Well,
full circle.
Sir. Yes. Dang. So, like, do you ever get down to the States to like just go on a Criterion binge?
Yeah, I think I was in New York 3 years ago, and I went to the Virgin Megastore, which is vastly overpriced, but still it was so much cheaper than what they sell like Criterion's for here in Canada. Wow. So.
Well, now that that's closing down, good timing, sir.
It is?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, all Virgin Megastores are closing. Mm-hmm. They're going out of business.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, the economy is tough on everyone. Actually, the one in New York, they're closing down to do like some like young yuppie clothing store or something. Essentially, they're like, we can make more money if we get someone else in here.
Ugh.
And it was like Virgin's parent company who kicked them out.
Because we need more young Virgin, not Virgin, yuppie stores. We need more Virgin yuppies. That's what I was trying to say.
More young Virgin stores. Wait, what? Okay, I'm leaving that one alone. Okay. Yikes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you ever get down here, I'll take you to the good places, sir.
Yeah, we know a few.
So, cool. All right, well, shall we talk about what is hitting theaters this week?
Absolutely. From the director of Michael Clayton, you've got Duplicity, starring Julia Roberts and Clive Owen. Does anybody want to see this movie?
Not even a little.
I do. I've heard excellent things about it, actually.
Oh, that's good.
I have too, but I still just, I can't work up the desire to actually go spend the time to go out to the theater.
Well, it's, I hate Julia Roberts, but still.
Okay, yeah, there it is. You put it, yeah, okay.
Well, we'll see. I'm hoping it's good because I like the cast, but just not that excited. As opposed to I Love You, Man with Paul Rudd and Jason Segel.
I'm going to have to see it.
I want to see this. This looks great.
After How I Met Your Mother, after forgetting Sarah Marshall, I'm officially a Jason Segel fan.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Nicolas Cage in Knowing from the director of The Crow and Dark City. I like to say that as opposed to
wait. I know that it won't be good.
Oh, instant review.
Dang.
I'm curious about this one because this is what Richard Kelly was going to direct this at one point after Donnie Darko. This was actually one of his first choices, this screenplay, and apparently it's a great script. We'll see what they do with it.
I like Piranhas overall.
Yeah. Yeah, especially his first two movies.
Yes.
And a limited release. I love this movie. It's light. It's charming. It's PG. It's a PG rated comedy. Most people will be like, well, you know, it doesn't have any fart or dick jokes. But I like The Great Buck Howard. This is with Colin Hanks, John Malkovich, Emily Blunt, and Tom Hanks, and Steve Zahn. It's a lot of fun. It's really sweet. It's good natured. It's the kind of comedy you could take your grandma to. I know that doesn't sound like a rave review, but not every movie has to be an Apatow comedy. This is a really gentle movie. I thought it was really good.
Right on.
It's about a hypnotist, an out-of-work hypnotist who all of a sudden gets a big comeback, and it's about his comeback trail. And this guy is a total egomaniac, and he's played by John Malkovich, and Colin Hanks is the poor assistant and has to put up with his crap. So yeah, good movie. Good movie. Okay. If you can see it, definitely check it out.
Right on. Yeah, it's only releasing on like 50 screens. So.
Yeah, I hope it gets wider.
Hope it gets expanded, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and next week sucks for DVDs too.
More or less. You got one of the most overhyped and certainly one of the more underwhelming James Bond movies, Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, did I say that I watched that?
You did.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think you did. We haven't talked about it. Yeah.
No. Okay, go ahead and we'll...
Yeah. Well, it's available on a 1- and 2-disc special edition.
Is there a half-disc edition? That's my question.
And then there's Bolt, Voices of John Travolta and Miley Cyrus. I love this movie. That's unavailable on a 2-disc special edition. Watchmen, Tales of the Black Freighter, and Under the Hood, the animated films are being released.
Yeah, Tale of the Black Freighter is animated, and apparently Under the Hood isn't like an audio reading of it. It's like a documentary vaguely referencing the
Interesting.
Book.
Hmm.
Okay.
See how they are.
Yeah.
Because these were officially supposed to be part of the film at one point?
No, only Black Freighter is.
Okay, okay.
The other thing wasn't going to be involved at all from what I've read.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. And then Hitchcock's To Catch a Thief. They're re-releasing a masterpiece. This is Cary Grant and Grace Kelly making out in front of fireworks in the background. you know, as a thriller of the movie, I much, but as like as a romantic movie, yeah,
Grace
it's like
Kelly.
Yeah, it's pretty terrific. It really is. It's, you know, not one of his more suspenseful films, but yeah, in terms of just like a great date movie, you can't really do a whole lot better.
Very true. Do you have any thoughts on any of these at all, Ethan?
Yeah, Watchmen. I'm not, to be honest, I'm really interested in Under the Hood. I think that'll be really good, but I'm sorry, I'm just not that interested in the tale of the Black Vader thing.
Yeah, I'm not either, really. Like, this might hit the Netflix queue and stay down in the mid-20s of my, or probably the mid-30s of my 86 movie queue, but it's like one of those things I'd like to see it at some point, but there's always going to be something I want to watch more.
Exactly.
It was a subplot in the graphic novel that made it richer, but I don't think it was essential. So yeah. When they said there wasn't going to be in the movie, I don't think anybody was like, oh, they're losing the pirate. Because, you know, it's terrific and it's great subtext, but...
It's kind of like losing Tom Bombadil from Lord of the Rings.
There you go.
Yeah, you may have kind of liked the character, but there wasn't, you know, it wasn't essential.
Yeah, not essential to the story, so...
I think you kind of have to put in a little bit just to kind of help relate between the guy who runs the newsstand and the kid reading the comic. So yeah. I think it would help in that sense.
But considering what happened to those guys in the cut that we saw...
Fair enough.
They had like what, 20, 30 pages in the graphic novel? In the movie, they had what, 20, 30 seconds, maybe?
Like 10.
Yeah, that's generous. Because they just had the scene with the embrace, right?
No, there was a scene, like a 5-second cut where he like...
Oh, that's right. Where they're walking down the... Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yippee.
Ah, Watchmen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess that'll wrap it up. So if you want to shoot us any feedback, please do, by all means. You can hit us at podcast, Ethan, Josh, Barry, or Dave at ScreenGeeks.com. Next week, we're continuing our talk about Preston Sturges films. We're moving on to The Lady Eve,
yay,
which is another very fun,
great
movie.
Yeah.
Yes. So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
Take it easy.
Bye.